Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really significant legal clash with major implications for insurance contract law, especially when a business faces the nightmare of interruption.
Mm-hmm.
We're diving into the case of Bioeconomy Market, Inc. v. Harleysville Insurance Co. Think of this as a vital lesson in, well, what happens when a business suffers a catastrophe and the insurance intended to protect it doesn't quite measure up in the eyes of the court.
Yeah, this case is fascinating because it forces us to look closely at the relationship between an insurance company and its clients, specifically those, you know, unspoken understandings that exist within their agreement.
Right.
And at its heart is a very human story, a fire that had a devastating impact on a family-run business right here in upstate New York.
Exactly. So picture this. Bioeconomy Market, a local family-owned butcher shop in Rochester, New York, had what seemed like a comprehensive deluxe business owner's policy with Harleysville Insurance.
Oh.
Crucially, this policy included business interruption coverage, promising to cover lost income for up to a year if disaster struck. Then, in October 2002, the unthinkable happened. A fire caused significant damage, forcing them to temporarily close their doors.
And they did exactly what, well, any insured party would do. They filed a claim to recover their lost business income. But this is where the situation took a turn. Harleysville disputed the amount they were claiming and initially only paid out a portion, around $163,000.
Right. And it didn't end there. They went through alternative dispute resolution.
Yeah.
A process where a neutral third party helps resolve disputes outside of court, which actually awarded Bioeconomy an additional $244,000.
So they won that part.
You'd think that would settle things, right? But Harleysville then capped their lost business income payments at just 7 months, despite the fact that the policy clearly stated coverage for a full 12 months.
Wow, okay. So not honoring the full policy term.
Exactly. So right away, you see, this isn't just about a simple claim disagreement. It's about how the insurer's actions can have devastating knock-on effects.
That limitation of payments, especially when it contradicted the policy's stated terms, really put Bioeconomy in an incredibly difficult position. I mean, facing these ongoing delays and the significant shortfall in expected funds, the business began to experience severe financial strain.
Understandably.
Tragically, the cumulative effect of these issues led to Bioeconomy having to shut down permanently. You can just imagine the weight of that decision after all they had been through.
It's heartbreaking to think about the owners they've endured a fire, navigated the complexities of the claims process, and even secured an arbitration award. Yet the delays and insufficient payments ultimately led to the complete collapse of their livelihood.
Yeah.
So in October 2004, they decided to take legal action against Harleysville, the core of their lawsuit. Breach of contract and acting in bad faith, arguing that Harleysville's conduct directly caused the demise of their business, and they sought consequential damages to account for that ultimate loss. So with that backdrop, the big question the court had to grapple with was,
can Bioeconomy recover consequential damages, specifically the loss of their entire business because of Harleysville's alleged breach of the insurance contract? It's a question that really gets to the heart of what an insurance policy is meant to achieve and, well, the fundamental responsibilities an insurer carries.
Okay, let's unpack the majority opinion in this case, authored by Judge Piggott. The court placed significant emphasis on the concept of foreseeability, which is a really fundamental principle in contract law.
Precisely. Judge Piggott reasoned that when Bioeconomy purchased business interruption insurance, the very purpose of that coverage implied that both Bioeconomy and Harleysville understood that timely payments were absolutely critical to keep the business running after a disaster.
Makes sense.
It wasn't some unexpected outcome that delays could lead to the business failing. In fact, it was the very risk that type of insurance is designed to protect against. Meaning, you know, what consequences were reasonably predictable when the insurance contract was formed.
And now this is a crucial point where the court's reasoning takes a fascinating turn. They also brought in the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. For you, the listener, what this means is that even if it's not written down, there's a basic level of fair play expected in these agreements. Can you explain what this covenant entails, specifically in the context of insurance contracts?
Absolutely. This covenant is considered an inherent part of every contract, regardless of whether it's explicitly stated in the written agreement. In the insurance world, it means the insurer has a fundamental obligation to act fairly and in good faith when they are investigating and ultimately paying claims.
Okay.
The court argued that Harleysville's actions, the unreasonable delays and the unjustified limitation of payments to only 7 months, constituted a breach of this implied covenant. And because this breach led to the reasonably foreseeable collapse of Bioeconomy, the insurer could be held responsible for those resulting damages.
So the damages they were seeking compensation for the entire business going under were considered remedial. That's a really key distinction the court made, right?
Yes. Harleysville argued that awarding damages that went beyond the stated limits of the policy would essentially be punitive, meaning it would be punishing them.
Punishing them, right.
But the majority of the court countered that these consequential damages weren't about punishment. Instead, they were about making Bioeconomy whole, aiming to put them back in the financial position they would have been in had the contract been properly fulfilled. The core purpose of the business interruption policy was to ensure the continuity of the business after a covered loss, and the insurer's actions directly undermined that very purpose.
Now let's turn our attention to the dissenting opinion from Judge Smith. He had a significantly different perspective on this, didn't he?
He did. Judge Smith argued that the insurance policy itself explicitly excluded consequential losses, and therefore, in his view, any damages awarded should be strictly limited to the specific terms and coverage amounts outlined within that policy.
Stick to the letter of the contract.
He believed the majority was essentially overreaching and going beyond the agreed-upon terms of the contract.
And he also raised concerns about a potential blurring of the lines between consequential damages and punitive damages, particularly when considering a significant previous case, Rokanova v. Equitable Life Assurance Society, a case that set a high bar for proving bad faith in insurance.
Exactly. The Rokanova precedent established that to claim punitive damages in insurance disputes, you generally need to demonstrate egregious, tortious conduct directed at the insured and a pattern of similar misconduct aimed at the broader public.
A really high bar.
A very high bar. Judge Smith argued that the majority's ruling in Bioeconomy effectively allowed for damages that felt like punishment without meeting this strict Rokanova standard. He viewed the business's failure as a consequence of the alleged breach, but not necessarily as evidence of the kind of malicious or widespread bad faith that Rokanova required for punitive damages.
So is Judge Smith suggesting that the explicit terms of the contract should always trump these implied understandings?
That was certainly a key part of his argument, yes.
And he even warned about a potential ripple effect on the wider insurance market, didn't he?
Yes. He cautioned that this expanded potential liability for insurance companies could ultimately lead to an increase in insurance premiums for everyone, as insurers would need to factor in this greater risk when setting their rates.
So how did the court ultimately decide which of these views to follow? What specific legal test did they apply to reach their final outcome?
The court ultimately applied what is commonly known as the reasonably contemplated test. They essentially looked back to the moment the insurance contract was initially formed between Bioeconomy and Harleysville and asked, would a reasonable insurer, given the specific nature and fundamental purpose of a business interruption insurance policy, have reasonably contemplated that delaying or improperly denying essential payments could lead to the ultimate destruction of the insured's business?
So, was it foreseeable?
Exactly. The very nature of this type of insurance designed to keep a business afloat after a disaster strongly suggested that the answer to this question was yes. Essentially, the court is asking, was it obvious that messing with this type of insurance could lead to this kind of disaster?
And what was the final outcome of this legal battle?
The Court of Appeals ultimately reversed the decision of the lower court and reinstated Bioeconomy's claim specifically for consequential damages. This was a really significant ruling in New York because it broadened the potential liability for insurance companies, particularly in situations where their actions in bad faith lead to significant and foreseeable financial losses for the insured party.
Even beyond policy limits.
Even losses that go beyond the stated limits of the insurance policy itself, it really reinforced the critical importance of that implied duty of good faith that exists in all insurance contracts.
This case brings up some really crucial legal concepts.
Yeah.
Let's break down a few of them to ensure everyone is clear on the distinctions. First, the difference between direct damages and consequential damages. We've touched on it, but can you provide a really clear distinction and perhaps illustrate it with a simple example?
Certainly. Direct damages are those losses that flow directly and immediately from the specific breach of contract. In the context of an insurance policy, this would typically be the amounts covered within the explicit limits of the policy, for example, the actual cost to replace damaged inventory after a fire, or the lost business income payments as specifically defined by the policy terms for a set period.
Yeah, obvious stuff.
Pretty much. Consequential damages, on the other hand, are those losses that occur indirectly as a result of the breach. They are the knock-on collateral losses that happen as a consequence of the initial breach.
Okay.
Think of it this way. Imagine a landlord fails to repair a leaky roof in a building where someone runs a small online business from their home selling sensitive electronic equipment. The direct damage might be the immediate cost to finally repair the leaky roof itself.
Makes sense.
But the consequential damages could include the lost income from the electronics that were damaged by the water, and potentially even the forced temporary shutdown of the entire business due to the ongoing leaks. In the Buy Economy case, their central argument was that the complete loss and closure of their business was a consequential damage that directly resulted from Harleysville's breach of contract and their failure to act in good faith. So, for you, the listener, what this means is understanding that a breach of contract can have ripple effects beyond the immediate terms of the agreement.
That analogy really clarifies the difference. And we've discussed the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, but it's such a fundamental principle here that is worth reiterating. It's not something explicitly written into most insurance policies, but it's a basic legal expectation in virtually all contracts, correct?
Absolutely. The law implies this covenant into every contract to ensure that neither party acts in a way that would unfairly prevent the other party from receiving the intended benefits of their agreement.
Basic fairness.
Exactly. In the insurance context, it specifically means that the insurer must act fairly and reasonably throughout the entire process of investigating, adjusting, and ultimately paying insurance claims. They cannot unreasonably delay making payments on a valid claim or deny a legitimate claim without proper justification. This principle is all about ensuring a basic level of fairness in the contractual relationship.
Then there's the foreseeability test again. It seems to be absolutely central to the majority's legal reasoning in this case.
It is indeed. The court essentially asked whether a reasonable insurance company at the time they issued the business interruption policy to Buy Economy would have reasonably foreseen that their own delayed or insufficient payments following a covered loss could potentially lead to the complete financial ruin and ultimate closure of Buy Economy's business.
Especially given the purpose of the policy.
Especially given that the very purpose of this type of insurance is to prevent such a catastrophic outcome. The inherent nature of business interruption insurance makes it quite foreseeable that disrupting the flow of necessary funds after a disaster could have devastating and long-lasting consequences for the insured business.
And finally, let's revisit the dissenting opinion and Judge Smith's strong reliance on the precedent set by Rocanova. Why did he feel that the majority was, in a sense, sidestepping the requirements established in that prior ruling?
Judge Smith's concern was that by allowing Buy Economy to potentially recover for the complete loss of their business without requiring them to demonstrate the high level of egregious and publicly directed misconduct that Rocanova established as the standard for awarding punitive damages, the majority was effectively awarding what amounted to punitive damages under the guise of consequential damages.
Kind of a workaround.
That seemed to be his perspective. He believed that the original insurance contract already stipulated the remedies for a breach, which would typically be payment up to the policy limits, and that to expand this to cover the total demise of the business without meeting the Rocanova threshold was legally inappropriate and could potentially have negative consequences for the stability of the insurance market as a whole.
So, for our listeners, especially those who are law students, what are the key significance and practical takeaways from the Buy Economy case?
Well, this case is a really important one to understand, particularly if you have an interest in contract law or the specific field of insurance law in New York. It significantly reshapes how we interpret the obligations of insurance companies, emphasizing that their fundamental duty of good faith and fair dealing extends beyond just the literal explicit terms written within the insurance policy itself.
It's not just the words on the page.
Exactly. It clearly illustrates how courts will often look beyond the strict text of a contract to understand its underlying purpose and the reasonable expectations that both parties held when they entered into the agreement.
It really does sound like a crucial example of the judiciary looking beyond just the black and white of a contract to truly understand the intent and the real-world implications when one party fails to uphold their end of the bargain in good faith.
Precisely. And for those of you who will be future legal practitioners, this case underscores the potential for significantly expanded liability for insurance companies if they fail to handle claims in a fair and timely manner. It could very well influence how insurance companies process claims going forward, and might also lead to more litigation in situations where insured parties believe that an insurer's bad faith conduct has led to substantial consequential losses for their business.
And potentially higher premiums down the line.
It's also important to keep in mind the dissenting judge's point about the potential long-term impacts on insurance premiums as insurers factor in this increased level of potential risk and liability. It's a definite possibility.
So, to wrap up this deep dive into the case of Bioeconomy v. Harleysville, the core takeaway for you to remember is that insurance companies can indeed be held legally liable for foreseeable consequential damages that directly result from their breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
Right.
Even in situations where those damages ultimately extend beyond the initially stated limits of the insurance policy itself. The crucial element here is that these consequential damages must have been reasonably contemplated by both the insurer and the insured at the time the original insurance contract was formed.
That's a really concise and accurate summary of a complex case. Bioeconomy serves as a powerful and important reminder that insurance policies are not simply about the cold, hard numbers printed on the pages. They inherently carry a significant promise of fair dealing and good faith, and a failure to uphold that fundamental promise can indeed have very significant financial repercussions for the insurance company.
And that brings us to a final thought for you, our listeners. Considering the foundational purpose behind all different types of insurance policies, whether it's health insurance, specifically designed to protect your personal well-being and financial stability in the face of illness, homeowners insurance, carefully crafted to safeguard your most valuable asset, or any other form of coverage you might hold.
Yeah, good question.
How might this crucial legal principle of foreseeable consequential damages potentially apply in those very different contexts? What fundamental responsibilities do these implied covenants of good faith and fair dealing place on insurance companies in these diverse fields? And conversely, what important rights might they ultimately afford you, the insured party, when things unfortunately go wrong?
It really makes you think about the broader implications.
It definitely does. It's worth continuing to dive deeper into the fascinating world of insurance law and thoughtfully considering the ever-evolving legal interpretations of these absolutely crucial contractual obligations. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.